This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering, and we start today in the nation's capital, where Democrats want to fast-track a pandemic relief bill with the second impeachment trial of former President Donald Trump slated to begin next week. Joining us now on the line is Massachusetts Congressman Stephen Lynch. Congressman Lynch, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Good to be with you, Tiziana.
Congressman, before we dive in, I just want to wish you well after testing positive for COVID-19 last Friday.
Well, thank you. You're very kind. I actually, this past Saturday, I got a negative test, so that's good. But I still have to complete the protocol. And the docs tell me that's how this is supposed to work. So even though I got the two Pfizer vaccines, the two doses, they protect you from getting sick. They don't protect the virus from infecting you. So I never experienced any symptoms or anything like that. I know the press has, emphasized that I got the vaccine and I still got the virus, but I think that's misinformation. I got the vaccines and I didn't get sick. I got exposed, but I didn't get sick. So this is the way the docs tell me this is the way the vaccine is supposed to work. I just wanted to clear that up.
I do appreciate you clearing that up, and we're actually going to do one of our Ask the Doctor segments later in the hour where we're going to talk specifically about that further, the difference between being vaccinated from getting sick and whether or not you can still catch it. So I appreciate you providing that distinction. There's a lot for us to talk about. Let's dive in, and I want to start by framing up for our listeners. We have this question of the COVID bill. Now, we know President Biden has proposed $1.9 trillion. I mentioned earlier Democrats are expected to fast-track it if they have to. Now we have 10 Republican senators who are proposing a $600 billion bill. A lot of daylight there. Is that just people anchoring hard and you're going to come together and find a solution? Or is there so much daylight there that a fast track is the only way to go?
I'm not really sure what the underpinnings of the Senate proposal is, the 10 Republicans. So I really can't speak to that and what their strategy is. But I do know that we looked very hard at what we need to address the pandemic. And of course, within that basket are, there's the need for schools to reopen in a meaningful way in April or May. There's also funding there for rapid transit. I'm on the Transportation Committee, and we insisted that be included. I also fought very hard to include money for the airline, for airline workers, but also for Logan Airport. You know, it's the 16th largest airport in America. And, they've been trying not to lay people off over there, anticipating that when things get back, they want to be up and running. But so they're in a tough spot right now. And so we've been advocating for them. So there are a lot of things that have been subsumed within our COVID-19 relief bill that are very, very essential. And so, when they come up with a counteroffer of $600 billion, we look at our package and say, okay, we're going to have to do triage here. Where do we start? And all of this is very essential. So it makes it very difficult for us to look and say, okay, who's going to go without? There is a little bit of wiggle room here. So, for instance, in our bill, in the president's proposal, we anticipated let's give everybody unemployment benefits until September, right? That'll be safe. The Senate proposal is saying, well, let's do it till June. Maybe there's some wiggle room there that we could, split on July. And one thought is, let's make this conditional. Let's make it till June. And then if unemployment is still over a certain amount, then we will extend the benefits. That's another, a condition-based alternative. So we're looking at ways to get to yes, but we are far apart.
So I'm keyed in on you saying we're looking at ways to get to yes. I know you're aware that there's a public conversation about Democrats going it on their own here and Republican pushback that if that happens, it undermines Joe Biden's commitment to unity, bipartisanship. At the same time, we hear a lot of legislators saying we need more money than $600 billion. It sounds like you think there should be a priority to try to find a middle ground and get a bill passed in a bipartisan way. Am I hearing you correctly?
Not really, because this is
look, glad
this,
I asked.
This has to happen, right? So this, we're talking, you know, American lives here. So we will not stand on. I mean, it would be nice if it was bipartisan, and I think we owe the American people the hope of doing something, and I think it would be very good for the Biden administration going forward and our relationship with some of our Republican colleagues if we could go forward together. However, this has to get done. And so I'm hell or high water. If it has to rely on Democratic votes alone, then that's the way it's going to be. But this has to go. So, you know, we're negotiating in good faith, but at the end of the day, we've got to save the American people. Right. And we've got to get the economy back in line. And we're trying to make up for lost time because the previous administration did not take this seriously.
I'm noticing that phrase in good faith. That makes me think of another question I want to ask you, which is about this second impeachment trial for former President Donald Trump next week. Again, aware that five Republican senators were the only ones who even voted to proceed with the impeachment. You know, lots of commentary that foreshadows how many are likely to vote to convict in that trial. So is this a meaningful act with that kind of seemingly visible lack of support among half the Senate? Or is this a ceremonial thing that you think has to be done on this path to accountability?
Well, it's meaningful in the sense that I took an oath to protect and defend the Constitution. And so I meant those words when I said them. And you know, that the vote to impeach is entirely consistent and is based on my pledge, my oath to defend the Constitution. So, we don't have to go into the long litany of reasons that Donald Trump should be impeached again. He ordered a violent attack on the Capitol. You know, he lied about the election. I guess he's not saying that anymore in his latest brief before the Senate. But he did do that extensively, and there were Republicans that supported him. So, you know, he needs to be impeached. He needs to be impeached and convicted.
Is there any? Is there any worry, though, that if he is not convicted, that allows the former president to say, I was found not guilty. See, I didn't do anything wrong.
Well, basing my conduct on what he's going to say is just not well-founded, right? Because if we didn't impeach him, if we pulled back, he would say, see, they didn't impeach me. They knew they were wrong. I mean, you can't, the man's a lunatic. So you really can't base your conduct on what he's doing. And he's a pathological liar. So, you know, I don't want to go down that rabbit hole to try to reconcile my conduct and my decisions with what Donald Trump might say. That just can't happen.
So I hear your point there. And it again, makes me think of another question I want to ask you, which is a question about conduct in the House. I know you know about Marjorie Taylor Greene, one of your colleagues in the House, who has come under fire for some really extreme beliefs and comments and supporting things like suggestions that House Speaker Nancy Pelosi ought to be killed, that the Parkland shooting was a false flag operation. I know your colleague in the Massachusetts delegation, Jim McGovern, the Rules Committee are going to take up a question about her tomorrow, about stripping her of committee appointments. Given this oath that House members take and what you just said about being accountable for your own conduct, what do you believe is the appropriate way to handle the Marjorie Taylor Greene situation?
Well, I've actually signed on to the resolution as a co-sponsor to have her removed from those committees. I think Ms. Wasserman Schultz is the lead on that. But there's also the bigger question about expulsion. And so I know Mr. Gomez on our committee is circulating a letter, you know, a sense of Congress and dear colleague letter, just to sound out members. But I think the Ethics Committee and also there's an ongoing investigation, right, about the attacks on the Capitol and what members said what and what actions were taken, if any, on their part to assist and abet the insurrectionists. So when we get all that information together, we're going to have to figure out, whether expulsion is appropriate. And not only for her, but there may be others, right? We're letting the FBI do their job right now, and that includes, you know, the messaging, the social media, as well as, the videotapes of the Capitol complex from the 4th through the 8th of January. So, if there's aid and abetting being done by members of Congress to put their colleagues at risk and in support of a violent insurrection, then I believe they would have to be expelled as well. So we're trying to weigh that. We're trying to categorize our colleagues in terms of whether they merely voted, you know, against confirming the results of the election, or whether they were actively involved in the insurrection effort to interfere in the Electoral College count. So,
This really, it's a remarkable conversation we're having. You're talking about the potential of having to look at expelling colleagues. We had the newest member of the Massachusetts delegation, Jake Auchincloss, on last week. He said his first Wednesday was an insurrection. His second Wednesday was an impeachment. His third Wednesday was an inauguration. Have you ever seen anything like this in your 20 years in Congress?
Never. Nothing that even comes close. I mean, this is really, you know, it shakes the very foundations of our government. Things that I took for granted for so long, that you grow up with, the faith that you have in our system of government, and then to realize how terribly fragile all of this is, that threat on January 6th was an existential threat to our system of government and the peaceful transfer of power that forever we have taken for granted. So, no, I haven't seen anything like this. This would be a challenging time anyway. You know, put aside the insurrection, the attack on the Capitol, put aside the pandemic, just the slate of issues that we're confronting right now is daunting. And then to pile on the fact that, you know, they're attacking the Capitol and we're in the middle of a pandemic just makes our work that much harder.
What is the imperative to you? What are you doubling down on as a result?
Well, you know, we're trying to take things one step at a time. We're trying to be thorough and thoughtful. But there is that broader relationship. I consider myself a moderate Democrat. I've tried throughout my 20 years to work across the aisle with my Republican colleagues. But I have to say, over the last 4 to 6 years, many of them have decided not to run for reelection or they've been defeated by extremists within their own party. So those opportunities are dwindling. And now we really have to look very closely at what my colleagues did to undermine the outcome of the election, to undermine the legitimacy of our democratic elections, foster rebellion against the government. So, you know, we're all doing some soul searching, and we've had long conversations in the Democratic caucus and in my committees to talk about whether we can even, you know, work with people to co-sponsor bills, which used to be, you know, it used to be a badge of honor or a measure of credibility if you could get people from the other party to come onto your bill and support you. And that was really, you know, that that was about relationships, about, you know, I travel an awful lot, Iraq, Afghanistan, Somalia, Mali, and I always had Republican members with me. That's how you build relationships. You know their families, you know them, you know what their districts are like, you know what their challenges are, and you build relationships. But that's all been blown up. I really have to say that has changed the relationship for those members. And there are those who did not embrace any of that rebellious conduct, and who shut up. Maybe they didn't speak out as loudly as we would like, but they didn't partake. So there's a real fundamental reassessment of our relationship with our Republican colleagues and how we move forward.
That is Massachusetts Congressman Stephen Lynch. I appreciate you joining us. Thank you.
Thank you, Tiziana.